it's so obvious that, you know, if I ask you to make a choice, choose this or this, I have two things in my hand.
I can always say I'll take this.
Or you can say you'll take this because you have infinite choice. I'll take that.
Right. Makes sense. Let's talk about placebos, because everyone's heard about placebos, but I don't think most people in our culture
realize what a placebo
is.
The placebo, the word comes from the Latin root, I shall please.
Yes.
But what a placebo is the mechanics of creation. Originally, when placebos were found, they were discovered with analgesics, painkillers.
Yes.
So, and somebody found that if I gave you something which wasn't a painkiller, but you thought it was a painkiller, if I told you, look here, Tony, this is something that's going to kill your pain, and even inside there was nothing, not even sugar, it was biologically inert, then you would make something that would relieve the pain. And in fact, I could give you Narcan, which is a narcotic antagonist, and block the effect of the painkiller. In other words, the conclusion of this was that when you believed you were killing the pain with this drug, your body was making out stuff that was more powerful than any heroin you could buy on the street.
Wow.
Millions, in fact, 40,000 times more powerful than any heroin as a result of just the idea that this thing is really works.
Again, this is not an affirmation. This is not pumping yourself
up.
This is not trying to convince yourself.
No.
It's just somebody said, if you wear this garlic, I'll tell you what, you're going to have the pain disappear because you're going to smell so bad, you're going to run away.
Exactly.
But when people believe that, which means when they feel certain, they send the neurotransmitters out.
They hold this thought to be true. That's it. They hold this thought to be true, then the body sends out this heroin, which is more powerful than anything you can buy on the street. But now, the interesting thing is, I go to somebody else and I give them the same thing, and I say, this is going to get rid of your ulcer. Now, to get rid of the ulcer, you don't make heroin. You can't make a narcotic. You've got to make a very specific molecule. It's called an H2 receptor blocker. It has to interfere with hydrochloric acid binding to the receptors. So it's a very specific chemical. Now, I give you the same thing that I gave the other fellow who made heroin out of it. Okay? Now, I give him the same, this other person, the same thing. He makes an H2 receptor blocker. I go to a third person, and he has high blood pressure, and I need to lower his blood pressure. And for him, he needs another specific thing, which is called a beta blocker. It's another molecule.
Yes.
And the two couldn't be more dissimilar. He takes the same thing and he makes a beta blocker. Placebos work in cancer. You can go to somebody and you can say, well, this is a very effective chemotherapeutic drug. Not only will the cancer respond, but they'll, because they think it's chemotherapy, their hair will start falling out.
Yes.
They'll develop bleeding in the gums, and their platelet counts will also drop.
Yes.
So in each case, what you're doing is you're taking a belief, which is a thought, which you hold to be true, and converting it into a very specific molecule.
A biochemical reality in your body immediately.
Completely different printout.
So in essence, what you're saying then is, if we could just get control of our sense of certainty, that internal notion, as I think you call it, where we actually were the director of it, which we really are anyway.
Yeah.
We stop seducing ourselves or allowing others to be the director of our own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
We can create any chemical we need to heal our bodies. And this is what I'm hearing you say. Is that true?
Yeah, because we are the makers of our bodies. You go to a deeper level in your awareness and you end up discovering that, in fact, you do create even the molecules of your body in every second of your existence.
Yes. Very powerful. Let's talk about nocebos, because just as a belief that something is going to heal your body can cause you to create the chemicals to make yourself healthy, the belief that something is going to destroy your body can create an equal challenge,
because,
can it not?
You see, nocebos are the opposite of placebos. And in Australia, for example, there's an Aborigine culture where if you don't like somebody, you can go to the local witch doctor. And the local witch doctor will give you a little stick, and he says, point the stick at the person that you don't like, and that'll take care of him. And so the person goes, takes the stick, and points at the person that he doesn't like, and after a while, that person starts throwing up, starts having vomiting, and loses their appetite. They get emaciated, and within 1 week, they're dead. See the effect of that idea, the word itself, there's an ancient expression, and first there was the word, and the word was made into flesh. Well, in today's scientific terminology, we can say first there was the quantum event, and that was made into the neuropeptide. But the fact is, that impulse of information literally translates into a space-time event. And that space-time event is a molecule in your body. So the word cancer is a nocebo. I say, Mrs. Smith, you have this breast cancer. It's metastasized to your lungs and bones, and you have only 3 months to live. Now, if she is a believer and she's simple, then she'll take that information and translate it into that reality.
When you say she's simple, you mean that she just accepts the doctor as knowing what
she accepts the doctor. She, you know, she has relinquished her power to the words that come out from her doctor.
And who's a very caring man.
And
teaching what was taught him.
Yes.
Right.
But see, the statistics, what we call medical statistics, could be collective nocebos.
Yes.
They could be collective nocebos. I have read something in a certain manual, a scientific manual, and the scientific paper says in this particular disease, lung cancer, the mortality is 90% in 6 months. Now, I have no way of knowing when a patient walks into my office in which category he falls or she falls. She could easily be in the 10%. But because I have the statistic which I read, I reinforce it. You know, 90% chances are that you won't recover. Now, the poor fellow has gotten the wrong information because he could easily be in the 10%. In fact, maybe if we all started not employing these statistics,
maybe the percentage would change.
They would change. Yes. Because what the statistics are, a collective nocebo response.
Powerful. Now, I remember you quoted in one of your books a study that where they took, I believe it was rats, and they used camphor. And
right.
Why don't you share that study? That was very fascinating.
Well, they took rats and they gave them injections of a chemical called poly-IC, which is an immunostimulant. It stimulates the immune system. And then they had them smell camphor at the same time.
Right.
And after a while, the rats would just smell camphor and stimulate the immune system.
So neurologically, they'd been paired, or those listening, this is simply an anchor, as we call it.
An anchor, as you call it, and neuroassociative condition response.
That's right.
As you would call it.
That's right.
Now, you take another group of rats and you give them something that destroys the immune system and have them smell camphor at the same time. After a while, they'll smell camphor and destroy the immune system. Now, you have two groups of mice or rats. In one group, if you expose them to pneumococci, they get pneumonia and die of it in a few days. If you give them carcinogens, they get cancer and die of it in a few weeks. Nothing happens in the others. The crucial difference between survival and death in these mice is the interpretation of a memory that they have linked to a stimulus.
And again, I think the reason I brought this example up is this is not a conscious memory, as most people think in terms of consciousness, in terms of linguistics or communication. This is a neuroassociation, as we would call it.
Yes, but it's not only a neuro, it's a cellular association.
Yes, I understand.
Because the whole body is
at the deepest level.
At the deepest level.
Yeah. Because when I first started doing my work, one of the things I started to experiment with was taking people who had allergies and saying, listen, you know, we've done this anchoring where you change what your nervous system associates to something, or probably more accurately, what your cells associate to something. We've done that with emotions. You think of your boss, and we should have had to condition it now so that instead of feeling this pain and worry or upset or anger or resentment, we're automatically now you feel good. You don't have to think about it. It's automatic. Let's try this with your allergy. And I'll never forget, think of a time when you really absolutely felt vital physically, where you could just storm through anything, where you felt like nothing could stop you. And I would create a series of anchors where I could just touch them, for example, and bam, just like the camphor, they felt immediately incredible. They were firing off biochemistry. I wasn't familiar with that level. I just knew what I could see physiologically in terms of their posture and their breathing. Then I'd say, okay, now we're going to bring this, you know, element in. And we did a variety of things, cat hair and so forth. You know, people had those types of responses. We would fire off the anchor, expose them, cat hair, fire off. Pretty soon, cat hair made them feel great. They weren't sneezing. They didn't have the response. And when I first started telling people about it, they said, oh, this is anecdotal. But what I'm beginning to see now more and more, that this is, as you say, not just neurological, but at a deeper level, this is at a cellular level that we're conditioning ourselves in how to respond.
Yeah, and the cells are nothing other than fields of information. And those fields of information are nothing but self-interpretations. That's all they are. In fact, I'm sure you know of this condition called multiple personality syndrome, where a person may be diabetic and go into a diabetic coma in one personality, and another personality, they don't have diabetes, but they have arthritis or something else.
Yes.
So their whole physiology changes. We take the same knowledge that you are talking of in terms of neuroassociative conditioning, and we use things like aromatherapy,
yes.